The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman is brought to you by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and by Vermont Student Assistance Corporation, Green Mountain Power, Concept 2, Norwich Solar Technologies, The Alchemist Brewery, Let's Grow Kids, UVM Medical Center, and nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're spending the hour this week talking about women, work, and wages. That's the title of a new report that was issued today by Change the Story Vermont. Some of its findings include that about 4 out of 10 women who work full-time do not earn enough to meet basic living expenses for a single person, and the fact that more than a third of families led by a single mother are more than twice as likely to live in poverty. But another issue has come up in the report, and that is the impact of domestic violence and sexual harassment on women's working lives. I recorded a brief interview with a woman at today's launch of the report, in which she discussed the impact on her life of living with domestic violence. We're going to start with that clip. So if you could tell me your name.
I'm Christine Cushing.
How did being in a relationship with domestic violence affect you and your ability to hold a job?
I was only able to keep a job, you know, for maybe a month to 3 months before he had caused me to call out so many times or, you know, come home early from work, you know, whether it was telling me that if I didn't come home, he'd leave our daughter by herself, or telling me that if I went into work, he wouldn't be there, and just threatening that, you know, he would just wreak havoc at the house and, you know, smash things, and just all the threats that he made really caused me to never be able to actually keep a job. Until I decided to make a change for myself.
What was the critical thing that enabled you to leave that relationship, and what happened in your work life as a result?
I guess the first step was deciding that I needed to, I was tired of not making ends meet, and at the time I was pregnant with my second daughter. We were barely making it ends meet with our first daughter, and just deciding that I had to do something. I had to make a change. And I had always loved cooking. I was, at the age of 12, making homemade pies, pie crust and all, you know, homemade, and decided that I loved to cook but never really had enough experience to really want to get a job in the restaurant industry. And I saw all the flyers up around for the Community Kitchen Academy that Capstone Community Action has, and decided that I was going to take the steps and the necessary precautions to be able to be in the program. I had to wait a little while because at the time I was pregnant. And after I had my daughter, I decided that I was going to take the class and that I wasn't going to allow anything to stop me from taking the class. My ex tried so much to get me to quit the program or not go into class. But with the support of my mom being there to help me with my daughter, I graduated the class and have had the kitchen assistant job for 3.5 years now. And through the support of my chef that I had at the time, he always was very supportive of me. And if I, you know, had to leave early one day to deal with the situation at home, he always allowed me to. And he always reminded me that, you know, I didn't need to be in the relationship that I was in, and that they would support me, and that they would, you know, take precautions for me to be able to feel safe at work if I had decided to leave the relationship. And so through all of the confidence and support that Capstone has given me, you know, I've been able to leave him and still keep the job and still stay financially stable and for me and my kids.
What is your advice to other women who find themselves in this situation, being in an abusive relationship? What's your advice?
Just that there's so much help out there for you. You know, there's so many programs and so many organizations that want to see you succeed and want to see you have better for you and your, you know, if you have kids, your kids. and that they will be behind you and that they will stick behind you no matter what. Capstone actually had told me that if I needed for him not to be allowed on Capstone property, that he wouldn't be allowed on Capstone property, that if he wanted to receive any services from Capstone, that he'd actually have to call and make an appointment. And that was one of the biggest factors of me leaving him, was that knowing that Capstone would support me. And so many other places are like that, you know. If you're open and honest with your employer about, you know, I was in an abusive relationship, and it would make me feel more comfortable about not allowing him to be here. You know, so many organizations are going to be behind you and give you that support. You just have to make the decision that you want to have better for you and your children if you have any kids.
Thank you.
Tiff Bloomley, what did you hear in that story? What issues was Christy jump out at you?
Well, this is an area that actually has only begun to attract attention. Connecting the dots between a woman's experience of intimate partner violence and the impact on her finances, her ability to keep a job. I think that what we just heard captured everything that was documented in a national study of survivors who, you know, described the kind of impact. 83% of them said that their experience had affected their ability to work. Two-thirds had been discouraged from participating in educational programs or training programs. And we heard about that today at the launch of the report. 73% said that they...
73% of survivors of domestic abuse.
Yes, who were part of this survey had experienced... Their paychecks had been stolen, public benefits checks had been stolen, bank accounts had been drained, and all of those are things that, I mean, few of us would want to share that information openly with others, and so it's not something that I think is well known outside the community of either survivors or those who work with survivors. And so I think it's a really important connection to make, because women are the vast majority of those who experience intimate partner violence.
Now, what about sexual harassment and the toll, the economic impact of that on women's working lives?
Well, you know, they're post Harvey Weinstein and, all of the revelations that followed. I think there's been renewed discussion about this very topic. And women haven't only talked about the impact on their own mental health and well-being, but also talked about the promotions they didn't get and the fact that they felt they just had to leave their jobs. That was the only option that they had to get away from a very toxic environment or to feel safe. 8 out of 10 women who experience harassment leave their jobs within 2 years, as compared to half of other women. And, you know, the 22—I was thinking of another statistic, David. So we will just not continue that sentence.
Right. Okay. Carrie Brown, what is our understanding? I mean, it really is only in recent years with the Me Too movement that we've begun to talk about the impacts of sexual harassment and sort of the silent toll that it takes. And we've talked about the emotional toll, but this is also an economic issue that is ongoing, and that figure Tiff cited, 8 out of 10 women just leave their jobs. They just give up in those settings. What does that do to a woman when they just leave a job?
Yeah, I really like the way you put it as a silent toll, because it's exactly the kind of thing that people aren't talking about. And the as Tiff said, but also that there's the silence beforehand where I'm being harassed at work, but I really need this job. and I don't really know what my rights are. And I'm even if I do, I'm not sure I want to cause the trouble that it would cause to try to stand up for my rights. And so I'm just going to put up with it until I can find a better job. And then they move off and they find another job. The problem is that in many of those cases, if not most, they're going to lower paying jobs. They're just going to anything else that they can find. And so that's part of this kind of cumulative effect that we see contributing to the wage gap, where it's really hard to build a career or to build opportunities for yourself or to get yourself in line for promotion or advancement if you're just quitting because you experienced harassment and you couldn't stay at that job any longer. And it's a very rational decision to make often to leave the job where you're being harassed, except that then it puts you in this setback position. And the fact that we're not really talking about that impact of it as much is, I think, really unfortunate, because that's where we're seeing the sort of, aside from the mental health impact, aside from just the human dignity assault that people are experiencing, it's affecting their ability to support themselves and their families. And ultimately, that has an impact on all of us.
So when we speak about the gender gap, it's not uniform. It's different, for example, for women of color. Talk a little bit about what you have found about issues of women of color, women with disabilities.
Sure. Well, say, let's just look at the poverty rates for women of color, women with disabilities. The poverty rate for women with disabilities is over twice that of women without disabilities. And women of color, actually Black women and Asian women in Vermont, not only have a higher poverty rate than white women, but they also have a poverty rate that's higher than the national average, which I think is a kind of statistic that in Vermont, where we are a little exceptional about our progressive attitudes and politics, I think that will surprise a lot of people. And so, and then, you know, when we look at the wage gap, the wage gaps are really significant, particularly for Black women in Vermont. Women with disability earn about 26% of what men without a disability earn. But interestingly, men with a disability earn just 4 points difference from men without a disability. So you're talking about a difference of 26% versus 4%. And why that is, I can't tell you right now, but the disability community probably can.
Hmm. We're spending the hour, we're talking with Tiff Bloomley and Carrie Brown. Tiff Bloomley from Change the Story Vermont, Carrie Brown from the Vermont Commission on Women. There is a remarkable amount of fascinating data here documenting the extent of the problem. What about some of the solutions? What are some of the recommendations that you make for addressing the high rates of women in poverty and the ongoing persistence of the wage gap, which, as noted earlier, is about 16 cents. So women earn 84 cents for every dollar that a man earns. Carrie?
This report contains a number of recommendations. Some of them are kind of broad and some of them are fairly specific that we think could really help advance this. So one of the main recommendations is to commit to collecting and publishing and using better data. So this report is an effort at providing some of that data. But in order to create a report like this, it takes months and months and months and quite a lot of philanthropic dollars to be able to pull together one report that's got one set of data in it. 6 months from now, some of this may have changed. A year from now, it may have changed. And we need ongoing sources of data. And we need people who are in positions of leadership and decision-making to be asking for not only this data, but also data about race and about age and about disability to understand who it is that they're serving, who they want to serve, where the gaps are, and what needs to be done to address those. So really, asking for that data is something that everybody needs to do. We also recommend taking a look at what's going on in workplaces. Women have a grossly disproportionate share of family responsibilities on their shoulders compared to men, and it makes it especially hard for them sometimes to balance that with their work responsibilities. So anything that's going to help parents in particular, but anyone who's doing family caregiving, stay at work and be more effective there is going to be helpful. So for instance, paid family leave. This is something that some employers provide, some don't. If it were universally available, then everybody could be guaranteed to be able to at least take some paid time off when they have a child or when they have an elderly parent or some other relative that needs care, as well as policies like this that are structured so that men and women both have full and equal access to them, rather than building something that encourages women but is not so encouraging to men. So those are things that can kind of shift that. And then really looking at the amount of money that we pay. Tiff talked about the occupational segregation and women being clustered in some jobs and men in others, and looking at why is it that the jobs that have mostly women are paid less. Things like childcare workers and teachers and other service providers. Is that because we value that work less? Or, you know, we might want to really examine that, as well as for us to be recognizing our own biases and what impact they have. So that allowance, with the allowance example, is a perfect one, but also on a more systemic level, kind of looking at how are we implementing these systemic expectations and assumptions in ways that we shouldn't.
What about raising the minimum wage? What do we know about who makes the minimum wage in Vermont?
Well, we do know that there are more women earning minimum wage than there are men. And so any increase in the minimum wage is going to have a disproportionate impact on women in that way. We know that there are more women working in tipped wage jobs, and
explain what that is. So what a tipped wage is.
Sure, if you're working as a wait staff in a restaurant, for example, where you get some tips, the minimum wage for that job is half of the minimum wage for everybody else, because the expectation is that your tips will bring you up. I mean, the law is that the tips need to bring you up to minimum wage at least. And that varies a lot, right? Some restaurants, people are coming, the wait staff's coming home with their pockets overflowing with cash. And some, they're lucky if they're making the minimum wage. So there's a big disparity there. And that is more often women than it is men.
Tiff Bloomley, what is the pink tax?
Well, the pink tax is a kind of a hidden cost of products that are marketed specifically to women. And there's been, you know, a fair amount of talk about it recently because it seems not to be going away, even though people raise the issue. And New York City did a study of about 800 different products that were marketed to men or to women. And they looked at price differentials, and they found an enormous difference in the prices of you know, kinds of things that people buy every day, you know, razors and shaving cream and baby, even toys for kids that are marketed to boys versus those marketed to girls. And it's Consumer Reports has written about this. It's people don't disagree that this is happening. But of course, who's taking the producers of these to task? You know, am I going to sue the dry cleaner because my shirt, the buttons, I don't know, left to right, right to left, I pay $2 more per shirt than you do, David?
I was going to say, if you want the clearest tally where I have ever seen it, it's at the dry cleaners. I have never understood why a woman's blouse differs than a men's dress shirt to get cleaned. But there it is. You can quantify the difference, and it's usually not small. Same with men's trousers versus women's pants. And it's
and not only that, there are, you know, taxes that are imposed on imports that are different for, say, women's shoes with leather upsoles, maybe taxed at 15%, whereas for men's 12.5%. Why? Why? You know, that cannot be explained by manufacturing costs, you know, labor costs, et cetera. And that's just a strict across-the-board tax.
So what encourages you? What gives you hope? Where do you see signs of progress in this area of women in the workplace?
Oh, you know, I mean, these young women who play soccer, they are an incredible inspiration to me because they're unafraid to just kind of say, hey, it's 2020 almost, and we should be over this. You know, the kinds of things that are described, we actually can do an awful lot. And I guess some of our recommendations are really low-hanging fruit. They're things that would not take a whole lot of effort or money to do, but they could make an enormous difference. And Carrie and I have probably been talking about many of those things that are really low-hanging fruit for a couple decades now. And I think that, you know, I hear more and more young women talking about negotiating their salaries and standing up to sexual harassment and speaking truth to power. And, you know, so
I also want to go back to something you've pointed out, and I mentioned it in the setup to this, the cost of taking some time out to raise young children. So for young mothers, what is that cost?
Well, so just say a woman who's 35, she's been working since she was 22. She earns median annual wage for women, which is about $41,000 in the state of Vermont. Let's say she takes 5 years out. What does that cost her? About $430,000. Why? Because we're not just talking about lost wages. We're also talking about lost opportunities for promotion, for wage increases, and retirement contributions, which accrue over time. So that's a pretty hefty cost. And, you know, I think one of the things that we have to emphasize is for most families in Vermont, having a parent out of the workforce isn't an option. You know, we don't live in a society anymore in which one parent can stay home easily. Some can. And we ought to make it easier for families to care for their children. And that's a whole other, you know, discussion. But I'm just facing facts. We got a whole lot of people who can't. They can't afford childcare, or they don't have access to it where they live. The only choice really is to pull out of the labor force, and it has a tremendous impact on women, which really then becomes evident when they are senior citizens. The difference in their wealth and Social Security benefits is significant, and we are going to see this play out as we age as Vermonters.
Right. Okay. Well, Tiff Blumley and Carrie Brown, I want to thank you both for joining us on the Vermont Conversation this week.
Thank you so much for having us.
Mm-hmm. Tiff Blumley leads Change the Story Vermont, and Carrie Brown is Executive Director of the Vermont Commission on Women. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. We're going to be taking a short break for Christmas and New Year's, both of which fall on our Wednesday broadcast days. So we will be seeing you in the new year. But in the meantime, you can listen to all Vermont Conversations at vermontconversation.com any time of day or night, our podcast. I'm David Goodman. Have a great holidays, and we'll see you in 2020.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, this special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, is underwritten in part by Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. VSAC helps students of all ages save, plan, and pay for college and career training with education and career planning services, need-based grants, scholarships, low-cost education loans, and Vermont's official 529 College Savings Plan. Norwich Solar Technologies, providing complete clean energy services to Vermont schools, towns, nonprofits, and businesses. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, proud B Corp, using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as the Green Mountain Club. And nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.